Today on Maine Calling, ways to give usefully. Nonprofit and service organizations depend on financial donations to do their good work in the community. Those donations pay rent, transportation, staff salaries, and for essential items such as food for a food pantry. In recent years, several nonprofit organizations in Maine have been leaning into a slightly different operating model, asking for specific items that will be put to a specific use. This often connects people in a different kind of way. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will learn about this newer way of helping. Social media makes it a lot easier to reach out and create opportunities for useful giving, from cleaning products to baby clothes to volunteering. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to island and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Often when you make a donation or volunteer, you want to know that you are really helping someone. Today, we're going to learn about ways to give usefully and meet specific needs in Maine and beyond. Joining me, Angela Stone, who is Executive Director of Maine Needs, and Tade Sullivan, Commissioner with Volunteer Maine, which is also known as the Maine Commission for Community Service. He's also CEO of Big Brothers Big Sisters of Mid-Maine. We invite you to join the conversation. Are you looking for opportunities to make donations or volunteer in a meaningful way? Have you found them? Or do you find yourself turning to organizations that are newer in Maine? You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Thank you both so much for joining us, Angela and Tade. Angela, I'll start with you. Maine Needs is a relatively new organization, but you've grown so quickly, so clearly fulfilling a need. Tell me how Maine Needs got started.
Sure. Well, we started as a Facebook group. And before that, it started with me feeling a need to support asylum-seeking mothers in particular. It was the summer of 2018, and mothers were being separated from their children at the border, and I had young kids of my own. And so that was like the thing that was sort of taking up all of my mind space at the time. And so I dug in to the community here in Maine to try and figure out how I could help asylum-seeking mothers and young children, and quickly learned that everything that they were going without, Maine families were also going without, and people leaving incarceration were going without, and people leaving domestic violence. And so I spent a few weeks cold calling all of these organizations. My background's actually interior design, so I had no background in social work or nonprofit. So I spent a lot of time figuring out what was already available, like what people were doing, what organizations were doing, what they needed. And so we started by calling all of these different places, asking them, what are you often needing but not receiving? What are people asking for and going without? And so the first couple of weeks was just figuring that out and then taking that information and sharing it on Facebook in mom groups and whatnot. But it got so, I became so inundated with messages that I decided to create our own like private Facebook group. And after meeting these children that had just left the family shelter 3 weeks before, they were sleeping on hardwood floors, and they had twin four-year-old boys. They didn't have a single toy, a single crayon. They were asking for a plastic shower curtain liner. That was like the biggest thing they wanted because the kids were getting water everywhere. And I drove home from, this was an apartment in Portland, And I drove back home to my home in Cumberland, and I'm driving by all of these houses with basements and attics and full closets and cabinets, and thinking, like, this doesn't make sense. This doesn't make sense that there's somebody going without these really basic things that someone else is probably loading up their car with and dropping off somewhere where they, those same people would have to pay. So overnight, that's when I created Maine Needs as a Facebook group. And that was sort of to act as a community bulletin board and a bridge, so that as I'm learning, you know, as the novice that I was, and still, you know, very much am, as I'm learning what the need is and how people are being helped in some ways and not in other ways, how can I share what the reality is and what that situation is with all of these other people who are probably in the dark the same as I was? And how can we find tangible ways to really change this and make a difference and make sure the things that you are donating that you want to get rid of? And I think most of us, when we go through all of our stuff and we send it out, we want to make sure that it is reaching someone who really needs it. And I don't think that was the case. So we started as a Facebook group that continued to grow. Then we grew on Instagram, and now we have over 47,000 followers. And what that translates to for me is that I wasn't the only one that felt this way. I wasn't the only one who wanted things to make a little bit more sense and connect these pieces. That, you know, let's make sure that when we're getting rid of things, it's reaching people who need those exact things.
47,000 followers. And you also have actually a space now. You have a very organized space. I've seen it, where you are able to store things. So if somebody wants to donate their children's outgrown their fleeces and their coats or their shoes, those go on a shelf with a certain size. And then when a social worker comes to you and says, I have a family that needs this size, you can give it to them. Angela, you're going to grow even more, right?
Yeah. So we do have a space, and, you know, that was one of the components. Is there were a lot of organizations that were trying to take in some of these items, but it was impacting their actual model of what they were focused on. And so we very quickly realized that was part of the need. We needed a space for all of these items to go to, and where the focus was on basically a large community closet, not just with clothes, but with also with bedding, with toiletries, cleaning supplies, tents and sleeping bags. And we moved into 2,000 square feet, and we all thought that would be plenty. And then a year later, we doubled to 4,000 square feet. And I think ever since then, we've all been walking all over one another. We do have an incredible volunteer base because of the social media presence and following. And so we are moving to a new space off of exit 46 by the Jetport. In March or April, we'll see, but it's four times the size. So it's 16,000 square feet. And it's just as much about, now it's just as much about getting things to people as it is about growing this volunteer community, because it's really become, how do we create more of a safety net? And we thought we had 1,000 to 1,500 volunteers each year, but we've created this new tracking system, and we've learned that we've actually brought in over 800 volunteers just since November. So I think our counting of the number of volunteers and the effort that is going into this has been off a little. But the number of people that do want to help, we try to make it really easy. We're open 7 days a week, so people can really be flexible with their volunteer schedule, and it's just 3-hour shifts. And we have so many amazing dedicated volunteers that just keep coming back week after week, and they're always there on, you know, Tuesday morning or Wednesday afternoon, and you get to see the same faces, and it's like, so that's become part of it. It's not just about getting things from point A to point B, but how do we grow this community so that there are less people going without these basic need and these basic items.
Yeah, and I'll turn to you, Tate, in just a minute. But one of the things I thought was really interesting as I've followed Maine Needs and Maine Needs Growth, Angela, is that you will put out a specific call, say, we need 25 Instapots, for example, or something like that, and people will bring those. And what strikes me about it is that often people might clean out a room or an attic or a basement or their parents' house and bring a whole bunch of things. But what Maine Needs does is it spurs people to think, oh, you know, I've got that. Let me go find it. Let me go find that thing, which is a little bit different.
Yeah. We're being informed by real needs, real daily needs, and from people who know best, which is the caseworkers and street outreach teams and teachers and nurses. They're working directly with families. They're working directly with individuals. They're going to the encampments. They're seeing what they're going without, that they're, I mean, we literally have requests regularly from people that are saying, you know, somebody is walking around barefoot in the snow because their boots got too wet, you know? And so they're coming in last minute asking us for boots. And luckily we're at this place where, you know, we started out where it was just gently used items. And now we're getting 200 requests every 3 days. So we're also buying these items, like we're buying the boots, but they're very specific needs, and they're completely driven by what individuals and families really are going without.
So, and Tate, I want to turn to you because you're focusing on volunteer time, and clearly Angela is as well. But we've been talking about items, and I'm wondering, do you feel as though there are a lot of people out there who want to give of their time? They want to volunteer in a meaningful way, but they don't even know where to start. They don't know how to get matched with the right organization or the right situation?
Well, I'll give you a tip on an organization you can get volunteers matched with. So we aim to serve, I think it's 550 littles throughout the state of Maine. And, you know, we really try to follow the advice from Forrest Whitcraft, which is, you know, 100 years from now, it's not going to make a difference about how much money we had in our bank accounts, or, you know, what kind of house we lived in, or what kind of car we drove, but that we actually made a difference in the life of a child.
And you're talking about not all the volunteer organizations, but Big Brothers Big Sisters specifically.
Yeah. And when we find that there are a lot of people that come to us, Big Brothers Big Sisters, because they're looking to, as you said earlier, Jen, feed their soul, that they're looking for, you know, something beyond just the act of giving. They're trying to give of themselves. And I'm also part of Volunteer Maine, and we try to support volunteerism through a number of different sources, whether that's funding programs, helping train volunteers to be more effective within the organizations, to raise awareness of service areas and promote service as a strategy for communities to solve problems.
Do you find, Tade, that there are certain phases in life in which people turn to the organizations that are involved with Volunteer Maine, that I'm thinking about when people, maybe when their kids, when they become empty nesters, when their kids leave the house, or when they retire, or when they first move to Maine? Are there sort of trends in who people are, where they are in their life when they're looking for a meaningful volunteer activity?
Well, I think we immediately jump to the conclusion that we volunteer after we retire. But the truth of the matter is that there are people that are volunteering at all ages. And in fact, it's a greater indicator of, you know, community involvement and service later in life if you can get somebody involved as a volunteer at a very early age. Now, as an example, we work with, in our site-based programs, we work with high school students to mentor littles in elementary school. And they end up being better citizens directly a result of that volunteerism. But yes, there are, I mean, most often people think about, you know, when I slow down, when I reopen the next chapter in life, I'm going to volunteer. But really, I'm here to say volunteering works at any age.
All right. Well, calling in now is Emma Gabriel, who is Media Relations and Special Events Associate with Partners for World Health. Thanks so much for joining us, Emma.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Well, I know that Partners for World Health is a little bit older than Maine Needs, but it's still a relatively new organization. Tell us about your mission, how it got started.
Of course, yeah. So Partners for World Health was actually established in 2009 by our CEO and founder, Elizabeth McClellan. She saw that there was a lot of surplus medical equipment and supplies in her job as a nurse administrator in a large hospital. And so she started collecting those supplies, and she amassed about 11,000 pounds of medical equipment and supplies in her basement. And by 2009, rented the first warehouse. And so since then, we have grown to have several warehouses throughout New England, and have saved approximately 3 million pounds of medical equipment and supplies from landfills in northern New England and Maine.
It strikes me that, like Maine Needs, Partners for World Health really was just a good idea that someone needed to see and make happen.
Absolutely. And it grew organically. And, you know, I think the amount of volunteers that we have attests to how good people think that idea is, right? So we have over 1,000 registered volunteers. 95% of the work that we do at Partners for World Health is done by volunteers. And so there's a lot of people on board who really believe in the mission and vision of the organization. And, you know, you asked about our mission. Our mission is to help people lead healthy lives on a healthy planet. We do that by collecting, sorting, and redistributing medical equipment and supplies and getting them to communities in need locally and globally. So we have both local and global programs and a footprint in over 60 countries.
Emma, you mentioned hospitals at the beginning, and I know that much of the supplies, much of the equipment that you get comes from hospitals. But what about an individual that's listening today who's thinking, wow, you know, I have a wheelchair, I have some crutches, I have some medical supplies that my family's no longer using. Can you donate those?
Absolutely. So our website is www.partnersforworldhealth.org, and there we have a subsection of our website called Medical Supplies. If you click on that, there's a drop down that says Donate Medical Supplies. There is a full list of supplies that we accept. So anything from home care beds, we have an entire biomedical department where we have biomedical technicians on staff that refurbish biomedical equipment, cleaning products, cardiology, dental supplies, PPE, personal care, physical therapy and orthopedics, OBGYN. There are a number of things that we take that we want to give new life. And if individuals have those things, absolutely please send them our way. And you can just drop them off anytime between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m. Monday through Friday at 40 Walsh Drive in Portland, Maine.
Well, Emma, thank you so much for calling in. Emma Gabriel with Partners for World Health. And we'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're talking about useful giving and organizations in Maine that are involved in helping meet people's needs directly. With me, Tade Sullivan with Volunteer Maine and Big Brothers Big Sisters, and Angela Stone with Maine Needs. Share your comments and questions. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Joining us now is John Savodny, who is president of Maine Seacoast Mission. Thank you so much for giving us a call, John.
Sure, Jennifer. Thanks for having us.
I understand that your focus is on the coastal and island communities down east. Give us an example of how you help people in these communities.
Sure. Well, we provide a lot of island health care to to the folks living on the year-round unbridged islands of Maine, right? You can imagine it's really hard to get to an appointment when, you know, you've got to get on a ferry to get to the mainland. So we have a nurse practitioner that we bring out in our 74-foot boat, the Sunbeam, and she facilitates healthcare for folks on the islands. But then we also have a campus in Cherryfield, which is in Washington County, furthest down east you can get in Maine. And from that campus, we provide food through our food pantry. We have a housing program, and we have one of the largest after-school programs in the state in our EDGE program.
Mm, a lot of work, good work that you do. We're talking today about ways that people can give in a meaningful, targeted way. And I saw that there's an Amazon wish list on your website. Tell us how that list gets put together and how it all works.
Yeah, sure. So we have a Christmas program that goes back over 100 years. It was one of the first things that the mission started doing. We have a signature way of wrapping gifts that really comes from a period of our presence in white butcher paper with red string. That's the signature of the mission and the Christmas program. And we deliver about 10,000 presents a year to over 1,000 individuals and families in on the islands and down east coastal Maine. So over the years, as you can imagine, as digital commerce became available, we found that people were buying more things on Amazon and having them shipped direct to us, which is a great way to give. So now we've really curated that Amazon wish list so that it is targeted toward the kinds of items that we most need. So, for example, right now we really need items for teenagers. So when we're thinking of Christmas, we always tend to think of the littles and the middles, you know, the little kids with big smiles. But we sometimes forget about our teenagers who really, really need that sense of belonging. And our seniors who sometimes get left out in the wash. So we focus on the youngest Mainers and then some of our most senior Mainers. So that Amazon wish list is similarly targeted.
John, does a Seacoast mission depend on volunteers?
We do. We do. We accept volunteers and use them heavily, especially in our food pantry program, which is another really nice targeted way to give right now. You know, the holidays and the winter needs get higher, those heating bills go up, and then people are making tough choices between heating oil and food. So we see our usage go up in our food pantry. Folks volunteer there. We have a wonderful crew of shout out to those Cherryfield food pantry volunteers. Woot woot, you know who you are. And they do a great job of receiving, you know, those food items and processing them, getting them on the shelves in our brand new food pantry that was just opened in May.
Well, congratulations to you. And thank you so much for calling in. John Savodny with Maine Seacoast Mission, which focuses in down east Maine and the unbridged islands. We'll go to Mary Ann, who's calling from Lisbon Falls. Hi, Mary Ann. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. Thanks for this really important subject today, and I'm calling just for an idea for anybody who's driving around and who might see a homeless person, a houseless person in the streets waving a sign. You can put together what my friend Danny LaLiberty calls like warming kits, and they're just a simple Ziploc bag with some hand warmers in them. Maybe a gift card to a Dunkin' Donuts or something like that, some chapstick, some Band-Aids, a pair of gloves, and maybe a granola snack or a cheese stick. And it's something that you can kind of keep in your car. And if you see somebody who might need a warming kit like this, you can provide that and you have it right in your car, or you can deliver them. And I think it's something that I'm going to do this season and this winter to help our houseless friends in the Lewiston and Lisbon area.
Marianne, what a lovely idea. Thank you so much for calling and sharing that. I'll turn to you, Angela. What do you find people most need?
I just wanted to say Danny played an integral role in the way that Maine Needs was founded. And essentially, she was one of the first caseworkers that joined the Facebook group and made the connection for me with a whole bunch of other caseworkers and street outreach teams and home visiting nurses, and really turned Maine Needs into being what it is, which is a caseworker informed nonprofit. So it's we know what people need because of people like Danny that are working with individuals and families all over Maine. And one of those things is a mini warmth kit, which she was talking about. So we do kits. There's also someone named Heather Dallas that works a lot with Neighbors in Need, and she created something called a cleaning kit. And we've sort of taken both of those and expanded on this idea of making these kits, which is something like the last caller said, where you can do this with your kids, you could do this with your coworkers, you could do this at a Thanksgiving, you know, dinner, you can do this for a holiday party. And it really is just as simple as pulling together these really essential basic ingredients, putting them together, and then delivering them. You can deliver them to Maine Needs, or you can deliver them to a lot of other organizations. The cleaning kits in particular are something that I would say everybody that is housed, that is asking, that is requesting with us, needs a cleaning kit. So it's really hard to keep in stock. I know the United Way Alice report just came out with something, I think 2 years ago is the most recent one, that 249,000 households in Maine are going without basic needs being met. That's 42% of Maine. Over 4,000 people are unhoused, and 50% of them have at least one child. So it's how do we come up with these like really easy, simple ways where you can spend $10 or $15 and put something together for somebody that is in need of soap and shampoo and cleaning spray, or you know, someone who is unhoused. Like one of the most helpful things you can give them is like a $5 Dunkin' Donuts gift card, because it allows them to go in, warm up, wash their hands, get a drink. And then we do also have art kits, so that kids that don't have crayons and markers and coloring supplies and ways to create at home during cold winter days, they have those items now. And I think over 67,000 kits have been made in the last 4 years. And it's truly from the community. It's not us buying all of the supplies. It's the community like stepping up and making these kits at different businesses, churches, schools. And it's something where it doesn't have to go to Maine Needs. Like I, off the top of my head, you know, I think of Head Start and WIC locations. They would most likely accept the art kits, cleaning kits. And also we do Minute for Mom kits, which is like this idea of honoring the case, the caregiver or the person who is always looking out for everyone else, but doesn't have something for themselves. And that's as simple as like, you know, it could be a chocolate bar and tea and maybe like a face scrub and, you know, mani-pedi type, you know, setup or whatnot, but making sure that people who are focusing their entire budget on everyone else is sort of just given a moment to honor themselves and take care of themselves. And so that's what those kits are all about. And how do we reach more of these places throughout all of Maine? The mini warmth kit is super helpful at any place that is encountering unhoused people. So any shelter, any food pantry, any place like that. And in terms of the food pantries, if you're going without food and you're struggling to pay for groceries and you're struggling to pay for heat, you're also struggling to get diapers. You're struggling to get soap and shampoo and conditioner. So how do we, you know, also donate those items to the food pantries?
Tade.
Hey, one of the things that I throw out to you is that you can You can see this in the face of anybody who volunteers. It impacts them personally, right? So there's a lot of research that comes out that says that it impacts your mental health. It gives you a positive mental well-being. You get better social well-being, and it works to address issues of depression. I mean, I'll tell you, at least from our own experience with Big Brothers Big Sisters, it's not only the impact on that child, right? Because so many of the children out there are dealing with very adult issues these days. It's the impact that it makes on the volunteer. And people grow and have tremendous satisfaction just from those interactions. And I'll tell you, in terms of the things that you can do, it's not just about giving things. It's about giving time. And time is very important.
I'm going to go to Kelly in Cape Elizabeth. Go ahead, Kelly.
Hi, I just wanted to share another opportunity during the holidays to bring your families together, your children. It's a attempt we did last year with working with Pebble Street here in Portland, where the encampment that was on Commercial Street, we decided a handful of us here in the neighborhood to come together and bring 73 warming kits that included all the things that were just talked about, chapstick, hand warmers, Dunkin' Donut cards, et cetera. And collectively, we attempted last year to deliver them to the encampment. Unfortunately, it had been swept. So this year, we're working directly with Preble Street Eliza, who has helped us coordinate a meal drop-off that will be happening on the 23rd of December, and a location and time for us to now bring these warming kits and bags with our families to just try to give back for the holidays for the homeless.
And Kelly, let me ask, what does it mean to you to do this?
For me, the holidays really become more of a focus on taking care of others that are less fortunate. So for me, it's just really, I think, also impactful for our kids to be part of this and see how there are real struggles out there, because unfortunately a lot of families can be one paycheck away from being in that situation. So I hope, you know, for us and our kids and our friends, they can go home that night and feel extremely grateful for what they have and be more aware of the people that are in need.
Thanks so much for calling in. Kelly calling in from Cape Elizabeth. I'm going to turn now to Jen McAdoo, who is Executive Director of Furniture Friends. Thanks so much for joining us, Jen. And like Maine Needs and like Partners for World Health, Furniture Friends is relatively new and has grown exponentially, correct?
That's absolutely right, Jen. Thanks so much for having me today. In its current form, Furniture Friends has been around for 12 years, but we have roots in the community going back to the late 1990s. And we're an organization that helps people try and create their homes when they're living without essential household furniture.
Right. And like May Needs, you really depend on the powers of social media and the internet. People can go on your website and see what's needed, correct?
Absolutely. We try and have a good social media presence so we can stay connected with the community and let them know what our current needs are. But I can tell you that we are always in need of gently used household items to help people create their homes.
Yeah, and you take things that maybe some organizations don't, for example, mattresses, right?
We do. And out of respect for our clients, we focus on the gently used aspect of our furniture donations. So we ask that things be in good working condition and are not in disrepair or ripped, or in the case of mattresses, stained, because these are things that we're passing on to other people in our community.
Yeah. So what do you find are the household items that people need the most? What is most, what are people most grateful for, and what are you always in need of?
So that's an easy one. Beds are our most often requested item and the hardest thing for us to keep in stock. And I think this time of year, it's especially important to be thinking about what it's like for people who are sleeping on the floor night after night. And certainly in the cold, dark winter nights, that is no fun. But also, it's hard for people to be at their best at any given time if they don't have a decent bed to sleep in. So for children who are trying to perform well in school, or people who are trying to be successful in their jobs, if they're not sleeping well, it's hard for them to function well during the course of their days.
Jen, let me ask you this. I know a lot of people are bringing you items, maybe because one of their parents has died or they're downsizing. If people are able to bring items to Furniture Friends, or when your volunteers go and pick up those items, what are you hearing from the people who donate about the ability to give this item directly to you and in turn somebody who needs it directly?
Yeah, that's a great question. People are so happy to extend the useful life of the furniture donations that they're giving to us. Many people have concerns about the environmental impact of throwing away usable household items. But beyond that, knowing that those items are going to people that they'll probably never meet to help them move forward in their lives is something that is really impactful to the people who donate to us.
Well, thank you so much for calling, and congratulations to Furniture Friends for all the good work you've done. Jen McAdoo with Furniture Friends. We're going to take another quick break. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we're talking about different ways of giving, specifically when people can fill a specific need, and how meaningful that feels. With me today, Angela Stone with Maine Needs and Tade Sullivan with Volunteer Maine and Big Brothers Big Sisters. Join our conversation. Call us at 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or post to our Facebook page or to Instagram. I want to circle back to something we were talking about just a little bit ago. Tade was talking about the mental health benefits of volunteering. And, you know, I think that a lot of people would like to think, Angela, that they're volunteering for others and not just themselves, but it's okay to do something that benefits yourself as well, right?
I think, you know, one of the things that I've come to realize is, like, it's okay to watch the news and feel, you know, brokenhearted, and I feel overwhelmed and a little helpless. But what I think is important to say is that you should lean into that, the broken heart. You should lean into the thing that's bothering you about the state of the world or the polarization, and know that you're not helpless. There is something that can be done about everything. And sometimes I know I, for years, felt like there's too many things to tackle. There's too many different groups of people that are hurting and that are disadvantaged. And how do we pick one? And I would just encourage you to pick one. Just pick whatever is pulling at your heart the most and start there. The stories that have come out of from our volunteers about how much it means to them to be there and to keep showing up, to keep coming back. Especially during, we started accidentally during COVID, our 2020 is when we got our 501c3. And so, so we had so many people that were coming in, and that, the community that they felt, the people that they continued to meet and get to know, and, you know, the faces, you know, at that time it was like masked from the bottom down, but the people that they got to see and come back to each week started to mean something. And I've had stories of people who had lost loved ones, like, and this helped them to get through a time in their life that was incredibly delicate. We had one of the most impactful stories is that we had someone who came in, they had a scheduled volunteer shift, and they shared with one of our lead volunteers that before that shift, they were actually planning on committing suicide. And after the shift, they felt hope and they felt a sense of belonging, and they continue to come back each week. And I personally couldn't believe that story. The impact of like what we set out to do, the goal, the initial mission has become something so much different, which it's how do we come together? Because there is a brokenness around us, and how do we come together to mend those cracks and the hurt and the despair that we see around us? Because there is hope, and there is a lot that we can still do every day. And by everybody just doing what they can, you know, like we always say, like, you might not have time, or you might not have money, but maybe you have time. So come volunteer. If you don't have time, but you have money, please donate money. If you have things, please donate things. There's something for everyone, to be able to dig in and be part of.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say we like to say that we're defenders of potential, because you know when you have an opportunity to make an impact on a kid's life, it's life changing, right? So whether that's changing the outcome for that child because they're a better citizen, they're less likely to depend upon social supports, they're more likely to succeed in school. I get people that come up to me all the time and say, let me tell you about my story with Big Brothers, Big Sisters. I had somebody mentor me when I was a little kid and I was experiencing a difficult time in my life. I was homeless. I was dealing with issues with violence in our home. And it's important that we encourage people to give of their time, to give of themselves to it. I mean, in Maine, we've actually got a pretty incredible state. We rank number 10 among all states in terms of volunteerism. I think what I heard was that there's 408,000 residents that have actually volunteered for various causes in the state of Maine. But we always need more help. I mean, I have to tell you, Jen, I'm still looking for about 100 bigs to volunteer.
And you mainly need men, right? That's what I've heard.
Well, no? we need both men and women. But yes, we do have a particular need for men to volunteer. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I need to turn to somebody else. So finish your thought.
Thank you. We could use your help. So if you'd like to volunteer, log on to our website, bbbsmidmaine.org.
All right. Well, we're going to go to Mary Alice Scott, who's Public Affairs Manager for the Maine Association of Nonprofits. Mary Alice, we've heard from some wonderful organizations that provide this opportunity for direct and useful giving. We've heard from, of course, Maine Needs and Furniture Friends, Maine Seacoast Mission, and of course, Big Brothers, Big Sisters. What would you like to add to that list? Where are other places in Maine people can turn to for this kind of direct giving or direct volunteering?
Yeah, thank you so much for having us. It's incredible to hear such powerful stories from so many of the organizations that you have had on. And so I think we at Maine Association of Nonprofits don't necessarily do the direct work that these organizations do, but we support the communities in Maine by strengthening the leadership and the voice and organizational capacity of the organizations that you're talking to today. And so that's kind of how we fit into the picture. But we have 1,000 members across the street. We have a member directory. Folks are welcome to peruse to look toward other organizations that they might find for volunteering, although Volunteer Maine also has a great resource there. And one of the things that we are thinking about kind of at the end of the year, it's a time of giving. It's a time of kind of thinking about those year-end donations. And it's a little hard to pivot to talk about tax now, but one of the things I just wanted to make a plug for is that there's going to be a big change coming in 2025 with the standard deduction changing. And we have seen a drop in donations since the 2017 Tax Act, the Tax Jobs and Tax Act. And so I think one of the things we are hoping for is that to reinstate the charitable, the universal charitable deduction so that more people are able to give and take advantage of the tax benefits of giving to the organizations who benefit them and their communities. And so I won't get too far into the weeds, but
well, Mary Alice, I have a question for you. Yeah, I'm going to pick up the pace a little bit because we're near the end of the hour. Diane on Facebook says, is there a master list of organizations which provide things to people in need and what they accept for donations, especially north of Augusta? So do you know if such a master list exists?
I don't know if such a master list, and I bet actually Maine Needs would know better than I would of something along those lines, yeah.
Okay, well, Mary Alice, thanks for taking the time to call in. Mary Alice Scott is with the Maine Association of Nonprofits. Do you know, Angela, if people are looking to donate the needs north of Augusta, is there a good place to turn?
North of Augusta. So one thing that I will say that we have 16 county groups. So each county, you can go on Facebook and there's a private county group so that people can give directly. So if you have something to give and you don't know where to give, you can ask in that group and other people who are in the group will be able to share. But I don't know of a specific directory for northern Maine. For our organization, it's maineneeds.org/volunteer, and we try to make it as easy as possible. So there's no barriers. You can literally volunteer after work. You can volunteer in the morning while your kids are in school on the weekend. But I think it's pretty, once you just do a little bit of research online, wherever you are in Maine, I think it would be really easy to figure out how to help.
All right. A caller who dropped wanted to remind us that she says, I'm one who needs all these things, but I don't have access to the internet. People usually give .com and all that. Could somebody please put a phone number out there and remind these organizations to share their phone number? So, Tade, let me ask you this question sort of broadly. If you have ideas for somebody who is somebody who could be a recipient of some of the good work of these organizations, what do you suggest to them? And if they don't have a computer or high-speed internet?
Well, I would absolutely talk to the community organizations in your area. You had Maine Seacoast Mission. There's a number of great organizations. Like in our area, there's also Healthy Peninsula. And our number is 207-236-2227. And then there's also United Way. United Way has a program called 211, and they can connect you with particular needs that you may have a need for. So whether that's short-term assistance, referral for some specific needs, all those things can go, are often listed through their 211 system.
So, and you'd agree, Angela, do people who call 211, do their requests somehow at some point get through to Maine Needs?
Their requests don't get through to Maine Needs, but it is, it's sort of a directory for help. So if you're going without clothing, if you're going without heating and need heating assistance, they point you in the direction of where you can get help. There is a really strong need for more caseworkers and more street outreach teams. So that's why those groups, unfortunately it is online, but those Facebook groups, they're better together county groups so that people that don't have caseworkers or, you know, their kids aren't in school, they don't have access to a teacher, or they're not, you know, in the medical care, so that they can reach out. And I would encourage people that if you have needs, speak those needs. There's there is, it's the most human thing about us to have needs. Like we genuinely all have them. They're just different. Some of them are material needs. Some of them are physical needs. Some of them are mental, emotional needs. But we all need community, and we all need each other to like look out for one another. And so there's nothing, I think a lot of times people are afraid to just speak what they need and what they're going without.
Sure. And I need to cut you off, but I want to say that very quickly, I just looked up on Facebook and searched Better Together. And I see what you mean. I see Better Together, Cumberland County, Better Together, Penobscot County. So if somebody is interested, they can go there. I'm sorry to end the conversation, but we're out of time. Thank you to both of you, Angela Stone, Executive Director of Maine Needs, and Tade Sullivan, a commissioner with Volunteer Maine and CEO of Big Brothers Big Sisters on the Midcoast. Today's sound engineer was Jane Donahue. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I see also maineneeds.org/bettertogether. Thanks, Angela. Tomorrow on the program, it's part of our Passions and Pastimes series. We're going to learn about the wildly popular game, Magic the Gathering. This is Maine Public Radio.